Welcome to World Policy on Air, a weekly podcast from the pages and website of World Policy Journal, published by the nonprofit World Policy Institute in New York. I'm David Alpern. In this week's program, posted December 15, 2017, we spotlight a recent World Policy blog post about the social and political roots of a new drug scare in Budapest and elsewhere around Hungary. We'll also preview top stories in the new WPJ winter issue, cover line Native Voices. But first, some timely insights from global affairs analyst and author Michael Moran, head of transformative.io, risk and geostrategy consultants, and a visiting fellow at the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
Thanks, David. The year's end approaches, and everyone from the State Department to social media celebrities are putting the finishing touches on forecasts for the year to come. I'm no exception. Will 2018 be more stable, prosperous, humane, and sustainable than the year now ending? Or has humanity somehow slipped into a period where the trajectory of all these statistics is inevitably downward? There certainly are reasons to be glum. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists since 1947 has maintained a doomsday clock, and during the Cold War it gyrated from 2 minutes to midnight to about 7 minutes. In post-Cold War 1995, it was dialed all the way back to 14 minutes to midnight, but now we're at 2.5 minutes to midnight, roughly where we were in 1953, when Stalin ruled the Soviet Union and they tested their first hydrogen bomb. This strikes me as a bit less than scientific. A better measure can be found at the Council on Foreign Relations, which publishes a preventative priorities survey. For 2018, the PPS indicates that while many conflicts could erupt, only three make the survey's Tier 1 definition of being both moderately likely and having a high potential impact on the world. The recently ramped up North Korean standoff with the U.S. leads the list, a possible clash between NATO and Russian forces in Europe is second, and a conflict between China and those who dispute its recent aggressiveness in the South and East China Seas brings up the rear. CFR's measure avoids hyperbole, as it should. Full disclosure, I'm one of those surveyed. But as unfashionable as it is to say these days, I'm thinking 2018 will by and large be a good one for the world. Some of my optimism is drawn from the good economic climate. The World Bank, the Chinese, and Goldman Sachs, many others, see strong global growth in the coming year. That's in part because all of the planet's large economies and economic blocks are growing at the same time. The new wealth created will be unevenly distributed, yes, but it's better than not distributing any wealth at all. But the real reason to be optimistic is simply that the worst fears of Pollyanna's failed to materialize in 2017. Despite Syria's ongoing civil war, for instance, global deaths caused by war are near a three-century low. And 90% of the world today has access to clean water, according to the World Bank, up from just 76% in 1990. So yes, there are problems. But we have mostly lived to fight another year. So let's not be too negative this New Year's Eve. After all, if we're always saying it's 2 minutes to midnight, how will we motivate anyone to tackle the big long-term issues facing humanity? Taking a step back and a deep cleansing breath as 2017 turns to 2018 can help us all make the world a better place. For World Policy on Air, this is Michael Moran.
You're listening to World Policy on Air. Now this.
What happened was we got in the cab, we paid for this suite, another $60 or something, a little bit more, it was 80. It's like 80 bucks. You know, we give them the money.
Oh yeah, I wasn't even watching. And always watch when you're like exchanging.
Keep an eye. Yeah. It was a sleight of hand, these guys are magicians out here. Yeah. We started freaking out. I was like, my heart was racing.
Challenges like those faced by four young Westerners trying to buy marijuana in Budapest, as detailed in their YouTube video last summer, is hardly the city's biggest drug problem these days. Local newspaper headlines about that time blared drug invasion, new designer drug wreaks havoc, death toll rising. Hundreds of articles described hospitalizations and fatal overdoses from the use of new psychoactive substances, especially among the poorest and most marginalized of Hungary's capital. There were predictable police sweeps and arrests, notably in one area particularly affected, but law enforcement was not getting to the social roots of the problem, according to Peter Shiroshi, a local human rights activist and drug policy expert. Representing the Hungarian Harm Reduction Network at the National Government's Drug Advisory Body since 2007, Shiroshi recently wrote about the situation for the World Policy blog, And we talked about it the other day for this podcast.
Peter Cerosi, welcome to World Policy on Air.
Hello.
You say Hungary's official response to the drug problem in Budapest is typical of what sociologists call moral panic. How is that defined?
So the concept of moral panic was introduced to the sociologist literature by Stanley Cohen, who wrote a book called Folks, Devil, and Moral Panics in the 1960s. And actually he calls moral panic the phenomenon when a certain social group is alienated and discriminated by the norm-abiding population, and the media creates a hype, exaggerating the problem and portraying that social group as deviant and dangerous for social norms and values. And actually, moral panics usually contribute to the escalation of repressive responses from the government. In the context of moral panics, it is very difficult to highlight the structural inequalities that are behind the problems, such as poverty, unemployment, racial segregation or discrimination, which is in case, I think these are the real problems we should talk about.
To get particular, tell us about the area most impacted by the new drug problem. Where is it? What does it look like?
Actually, the whole city is affected to a certain extent by the problem, but the most affected part of Budapest are those where the most concentrated populations live in poverty, deep poverty. So the poorest neighborhoods of Budapest are most affected. And there is one neighborhood which is especially affected, and that's called Hős Street, which is in the suburbs of Budapest. And there are, you know, block houses there built before the Second World War. And these block houses were built for the poorest inhabitants of Budapest. They are usually, you know, very small apartments where sometimes these apartments are shared by more families, and there is no running hot water in the apartments. People should share toilets. So these are not very, you know, favorable living conditions, and these block houses are actually kind of epicenters of the drug problem in Budapest. Not only that, you know, poor people who live there they use these drugs, but it's also kind of, you know, the people who live there also sell these drugs.
What about the changing population there, past and present, how it reflects a changing Hungary, its challenged social systems and safety net?
Actually, if you look at the social inequalities in Hungary, that Hungary performs among the worst countries in the European Union. So we are on the 25th on the poverty list of the European Union. So the gap between the rich and the poor has been increasing since the fall of the old communist regime. And between 2010 and 2013, the proportion of those living in deep poverty increased from 20 to 26%. And there are tens of thousands of children in Hungary who live in deep poverty. And in this special neighborhood, for example, there are 150 children who live there. And the current government is not doing much to, you know, to help these people. And actually, they cut the budget for social care and public health care. And they deal with social problems such as poverty and homelessness as mainly a policing, a law enforcement problem. So they criminalize the poor. And for example, the use of public spaces in most parts of Budapest is an offense. And homeless people are usually harassed by the police. And drug use is a crime. And the current government actually increased the penalties against those who use drugs. And there are many raids, police raids in these areas. And if you are poor, if you, for example, belong to the ethnic minority group we call Roma people, then you have much more chance to get arrested for drug use. And in this area, most people who live there are actually Roma people. So the color of their skin is actually darker than most Hungarians, and they are often discriminated by the police. They don't have any access to basic healthcare. They don't participate in the public education, and they are most of them are unemployed. So there are a lot of problems with these populations. Actually, I think the drug problems are only the symptoms of social exclusion of these people.
When did drugs first come into the area? What kind of drugs, and what are the new drugs and the particular dangers involved with their composition and the way they're made?
Before 2008, most people injected heroin and amphetamines in Budapest. After 2008 and 2009, new drugs came to Hungary, not only to Hungary, but also to Europe. We call them new psychoactive substances or designer drugs. These drugs are produced in Asia, mostly in China and India, and then they are imported to Hungary. And most of these drugs are either synthetic stimulants, such as cathinol type drugs, which are usually injected, or synthetic cannabinoid type drugs, which are smoked. So these drugs are sold as substitutes for the natural cannabis plants, but of course their psychopharmacological properties are quite different. So they are actually more risky and more dangerous. And in this special neighborhood, most poor people actually smoke this spice synthetic cannabinoid products.
And there's hardly any regulation. I mean, of course, there's no official regulation, but nobody knows for sure how the particular batch of drugs they've purchased is really put together and what's in it.
Yeah, that's right. This market of new psychotic substances is really unpredictable. So the greatest danger is that people don't know what they use. So that the government is banning the incoming new substances one after the other. And that means that the market is in a constant flux. And there are always new substances in the market. And they're effects and dose response can be quite different from the previous one. So people tend to overuse or overdose these substances. And another problem is that our treatment system and harm reduction system in Budapest is designed for opioid users, and that's quite different than the new psychoactive substance users, who tend to be younger and tend to have different kind of health problems. For example, heroin was injected like 3 or 4 times a day, but these new designer drugs are injected 10 or 15 times a day. And that means that these people, for example, have a much more risk to infect through sharing injecting equipment such as needles and syringes. And they have a much more demand for needle exchange. But in this period of Hungary now, we have less and less money on public health services, so this demand is not met. Actually, new synthetic cannabinoids are imported to Hungary as in a powder form, and this powder needs to be solved in an acidic liquid, and they produce a liquid, and that liquid is sprayed on different kinds of herbs. And these herbs are sold on the streets as, they call it magic tobacco or bioweed, or they call it different names. And actually, this process of producing this sprayed herbs is not supervised by chemists, but these people don't really have any chemist degree. So many mistakes are made during the process. And these mistakes sometimes can mean that people overdose because there is too much ingredient coming to the substance, or there are some pollutants in the substance. And so this kind of insecurity and lack of professionalism in making these substances and the properties of the black market, actually they cause a lot of accidents and a lot of problems in itself. So you don't even need to have a new substance. Maybe they just made a mistake in the process of producing the same substance.
What behaviors that these drugs cause prove most problematic to other people around Budapest? Is it selling them, and is it crime to raise money for them? What are people who are not involved in the drug traffic most aware of and most complaining about?
When these drugs are overused, then people tend to be paranoid and aggressive because of the use of these drugs, and they can behave oddly, you know, on public transportation, for example. We had reports that some people were afraid of them, afraid of their behavior, or even some people were, you know, aggressively begging from them for money. So usually they don't really, you know, beat up people or something like that, but they behave strangely, and that's enough to create fear in the population. And actually there is increasing public pressure on the local government and the police to solve this problem. But of course, this fear is also generated by the media reports. So the media always plays a role to sensationalize these issues.
Talk about some of the organizations that are trying to deal with the area's drug problems, the kind of programs that they have.
One of the organizations that try to help these people is called Contour Association. That's an NGO. And they try to provide some help and consultation, organizing some events for kids, provide some alternative ways of spending their free time, consult their parents about you know, parenting issues. So they try to support the community, and they try to advocate for the community's rights. But but actually, this is a very small NGO with very limited capacities and resources.
And what kind of support do they get or don't get from the local and national governments?
Not much support, unfortunately. They got a room, so they can rent a room in one of the blockhouses. And in this room, they can accept people, and you know, they can make the consultations and even for the children. But they don't receive any financial support from the local government. The local government is, you know, pointing their fingers to the national government, and the national government is pointing its fingers to the local government. So nobody wants to take the responsibility. There is no leadership in solving this problem. And in general, as I said, there were many, you know, budget cuts in terms of social spending in Hungary. So even those grants which are available for these NGOs are very small.
Worse than just withholding support, you say local government doesn't even communicate with the NGOs on the front line of the problem or the people themselves there. Say more about that, an effort simply to push tenants out.
Yeah, I'm sure that many people listening to this show heard about Hungary and its increasingly authoritarian government, which is now waging a war on NGOs, on civil society organizations, scapegoating actually NGOs for causing much trouble. And actually this hostile attitude of the government to civil society is also, you know, manifested in this problem here in the Hörstedt area, that, you know, the local government is not really a partner when it talks to NGOs. It doesn't really have any dialogue with the local community. They even try to evict as many people from the blockhouses as possible. They see the solution of the problem actually to escalate the problem, because then the community's indebtedness will increase, and then they can, you know, evict people from the area. But there is no real plan for any kind of social rehabilitation of this neighborhood, which is missing.
And some service providers are simply afraid to work in the area, you write, not only for personal safety, but for fear of being scapegoated for the problem's persistence. Say more about that.
Yes, especially, you know, harm reduction service providers. So those NGOs who provide, for example, clean needles and syringes for people who use drugs, they are afraid to go there and then provide health services for these people, because a few years ago there was some services in Budapest which were shut down because of political attacks from local governments. The local governments claim that actually these NGOs are causing the problem by attracting drug users to the area, and in two districts, needle exchange programs were shut down by local governments. So they are afraid that the same can happen with them. And this is really, I say, tragic because there is an increasing trend of hepatitis C infections, and this is clearly connected or caused by injecting drug use and sharing needles. So in 3 years, the prevalence of hepatitis C infections among drug users tripled in the country. And that's not accidental. That's partly because of the design of drug injection, but also because there is no access to clean needles. So that's a really big problem that even those people who try to help these people, they have to be afraid to go there, because then they will be scapegoated by some populist politicians. So that's a really important barrier.
To what degree are the drug sweeps and arrests spilling over to punish young people like those I saw protesting the government, increasingly dictatorial, as you say, of Prime Minister Viktor Orban? Is this sweep intended to put pressure on a whole segment of the population, aside from drugs, that has been protesting his policies?
Yeah, that's right. Actually, Orban's Minister of Home Affairs, Sándor Pintér, is promoting a tough-on-crime approach, which is quite known in America as well. So, and they try to repress those poor communities, especially those communities of color, who they claim to be responsible for social problems and nuisance on the street, and they use this kind of repression to silence those groups who are representing and advocating for the rights of these groups.
It was quite extraordinary. I was there in Budapest, I guess, in the spring, and even the tour guides were wearing pins in solidarity with the big protests going on against the government's pressure on the Soros-supported or originated university there. I was quite amazed to see the amount of public support for a university.
Yeah, that's right. There is opposition to the government policies. And there is also, not only the Central European University was one of the targets of the government, but also NGOs, because the government introduced a new law that actually requests NGOs to register as foreign agents if they receive funding from international donors. So NGOs such as mine are also scapegoated in the media, in the government, pro-government media. And it's very hard to express your concerns or tell your opinion to the people when most of the media is not controlled by the government. So sometimes even the drug law is used against political dissidents or opposition groups. For example, one club which was promoting some alternative events for youth, and some opposition political groups were having meetings there. There was a huge police raid against them, and the local government closed the place and claiming that it is like kind of drug distribution place without any evidence, because only they found very small amount of drugs. And now, actually, a court decided that this was actually violating the rights of those people who operate in that club, and now the club was reopened. So there is an ongoing fight.
As a drug expert and advisor, what do you see as the most likely approach to dealing with the drug problem in Budapest and Hungary more broadly, given the prevailing social and government attitudes? And what happens if only current law and order policies prevail?
Yeah, it's drug policy is not a rocket science. We know what works. We know it from other countries such as, Portugal, which decriminalized drug use more than 10 years ago, and we see that drug use did not increase, but actually drug problems decreased. Or we can now see that in those states, in the United States, where cannabis was legalized, the sky was not falling down. So I think we know what works. Harm reduction works. So what works is that to accept that drugs will not go away simply because we are punishing people who use them. and we need to support those people who use drugs and not to punish them. There is an international campaign with this slogan now called the Support Don't Punish campaign, and I think that that's the way Hungary should follow. But unfortunately, our current government is just going to the opposite direction. And actually, it's not only the problem of the government, but I have to admit that that Hungary as a society is a very socially conservative society. So we need to do a lot of public education to change attitudes to minority groups and to all kind of these sensitive social issues. And I'm afraid that we need to, that this society needs to suffer a lot before it will acknowledge or recognize that there is another way, there is an alternative policy which can help them.
Peter Shiroshi, thank you for your work and thank you for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Peter Shiroshi is a human rights activist and drug policy expert. He's been representing the Hungarian Harm Reduction Network at the National Government's Drug Advisory Body since 2007, and for the World Policy blog recently wrote the post headlined, "The Social Roots of the New Drug Scare in Budapest." Featured in the new WPJ winter issue, cover line Native Voices, you'll find an inside account of struggles behind the UN Declaration of Indigenous Rights and articles about a flawed treaty in New Zealand, rediscovered native roots in Norway, and the viral battle being waged by Bedouin Arabs. Plus, Portugal's economic prospects, Nigeria's growing cinema industry, Nollywood, and much more. World Policy On Air is a production of World Policy Journal at the nonprofit World Policy Institute in New York. Editor Jessica Laudis, Managing Editor Laurel Jerombeck, Podcast Producer Isabel Vasquez. I'm David Alpern.